Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, the show where we cover the news from the past couple of weeks in gaming. We talk about games, consoles, PCs, desktop, laptops, those are all the same things, and mobile as well, and the industry in general. My name is Patrick Beja. Today we're going to be talking about the Anthem demo, what we thought about it, what it might mean about the game once it comes out in a couple of weeks. We're also going to be talking about Apex Legends, which was uncharacteristically for any game announced and released the same day. And we're also going to be talking about Nintendo, some of the things they discussed and announced, and some of the rumors related to that, and a bunch of other things like a couple of games we've been playing, Rage 2, which looks kind of crazy, some controversy about Metro Exodus and the way it's being released, a bunch of other things. And to help me see super clearly in all of these things, I'm very glad to be welcoming for the first time to the show Dan from Dantix. Is that the proper way of introducing you? I didn't even ask before we first started. Dan from Dantix.
Yes, it is. I'm happy to be here. I'm Dan. I run the channel Dantix. So it's basically antics, but with a Dan to it. Very clever.
Well, you know, my Twitter name is not Patrick. So I think in the cleverness department, I've gone as low as anyone can. So I think Dantix is pretty good in comparison. So well done.
No problem.
So we are going to be talking first about Anthem. And that's basically why I asked you specifically to be on the show. And thank you for being on, for agreeing to come on. Because you've been covering Anthem quite a bit, and you know Destiny quite well also, and those games are probably well related. I've been playing the demo. I played about, I don't know, maybe 10, maybe a bit more hours between the VIP demo and the open demo. Yeah, the public demo from this weekend. Have you played a whole lot more than that, or what's your background?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I played, right now I play hundreds of hours of the game. Between being sent out to try it early, to try the full game early, and between the alpha and between the VIP and the public demo. So I have quite a bit of experience with the game.
So maybe you can help me, and actually that's my hope, because I'm very torn about the prospects for this game. And before I launch into that, I do want to remind people who might not know what it is. I don't know if any of those people exist in the world, but I guess maybe, so just in case. Anthem is a giant project by BioWare that has been, maybe not in development, but its inception started back in 2012. The game is published by EA, and it was a game that BioWare envisioned as I believe it was called Project Dylan for Bob Dylan, and the idea was to revolutionize the way that people think about games, or, you know, maybe that's the inspiration for that game. I think a lot of time has passed, and a lot of games have come out, which kind of make this a little bit of a, not a copy, but a lot of inspiration has been taken from some other games. And it's a game as a service. You jump into an exoskeleton, you fly around in an open world environment for some parts, or you go on missions, always match made with a team of three other people. You have different types of exoskeleton. Let's call them Iron Man armors, because that's what they feel like. And you have four types available, which work essentially as classes. And you go out and do missions. It's a lot of shooting, a lot of ability using, and you do missions against increasingly difficult enemies for increasingly powerful loot. So it's a looter shooter in the third person with flying suits of armor. I guess that's the best way to describe it.
Exactly. But while you're going through the main storyline and the main missions, you actually can do that solo or just with another friend. You don't need to do that with four other people. So that is something to note if you do want to try that. And I did actually get a chance to try a few missions alone. And that is completely possible for those Mass Effect purists out there who want to play solo. That is possible. But then the late game content, the strongholds, which function like a smaller raid, like a four-man raid, they have to be done with four people. So in terms of the fantasy, it really is a looter shooter, Iron Man like experience that has you, I guess, on a third axis is the best way to describe it. Mass Effect's kind of multiplayer on a third axis.
Right, so you add the verticality of the game, and that plays a huge role, and we'll talk about this in a second. I'm going to set aside the technical issues of the game, of the demo, because there were many, many mm-hmm. in the VIP demo. They were a lot less numerous, but still present to an extent in the public demo that happened a week later. Hopefully for the release of the game, you know, the build that we've been using for the demo was an older build, a few weeks older than the one that's going to be coming out in on the 22nd. And we'll assume that the game, beyond maybe the mad rush of the first 20 hours or so, is going to work and function properly. That's an assumption, but I hope that's how it will work. But so let's leave that aside for a second. The game itself, I am constantly torn between... so I have to say, first of all, the flying feels incredible. It is the highlight of my experience for the demo, which, again, I've played for several hours. It feels really good to go around flying in those. It feels like Iron Man. I have a friend who calls it Iron Man is vacationing on Pandora from Avatar. And that's what it feels like. And so that feels really good. The shooting feels okay. It's not a deterrent to playing, but I don't think it feels as good as it does in something like Destiny, for example. But the main concern I have is that we only had access to three missions in the demo and one stronghold, which is essentially, as you mentioned, Dan, a small raid or dungeon or strike, something like that. And it mm-hmm. felt a little bit samey because all the missions are match made with three other people. So you're in the dungeon as well. So you're always, and actually you can also, the third type of activity you can do is go free roaming in the world, and you'll see missions pop up here and there in a little bit more free way than in the missions. Some activities pop up, but that also is match made with three other people. So you're always in a team of four. And I felt like the variety of activities wasn't very wide. And that, so it felt like I was doing the same thing over and over and over again, which might be fun, but the trick in those games, I think, be it, you know, Diablo or Destiny or any of those, the trick is mm-hmm. for the designers to trick you into thinking you're doing something different, even though you're always, you know, pointing and shooting, pointing and shooting. But if you do that on a bounty or on a solo run or then on a multiplayer thing, or if there are other players around you, it feels a little bit different or different enough that you don't get that routine that kind of spoils it a little bit for you. So I have this feeling on the one hand, and then I watch videos and explanations about the loot grind, videos like yours, Dan, when you detail things like the combo system and the way the items chase, it becomes mm-hmm. more and more exciting because you get more powerful items that change the way you look at the game. And I'm like, but the potential is so big for this game to be really fun and really satisfying in that loot chase that those games always do. So I guess my mm-hmm. question is, which of the Patricks is correct? Is it really exciting, or does it become samey after a while?
Well, this is a big one to unpack. Firstly, with what you could see in the VIP demo and in the public demo was quite a small portion of the game. Now, outside of the one stronghold and the three missions and the small section of free play that you can play, there is, you know, a larger range of missions. There's a whole storyline. We don't expect it to be the same size as, say, Mass Effect 3, but I expect, you know, at least 10, 20 hours of content there. Then we have extra Stronghold missions. I believe there's 3 at release. And then we have something called Legendary Contracts or Contracts. These are repeatable missions, so to speak. They don't like calling it repeatable, but that's what it is. And what happens is you take a contract from a particular vendor and you have to fulfill certain requirements. Now, every time you go out and do this mission, it will be different. It'll be randomized. So it might have you going and collecting certain things and handing them in. It might have you going and killing certain enemies. It'll be randomized at each step. So
it's one way of essentially it's bounties Destiny or any other games. It's repeatable quests, right?
Yeah, exactly, with random aspects. And then you have the daily, the weekly, and the monthly quests that you can get through. Those will reward you with coin. And with that coin, you can buy those items that you need, those cosmetic items that you need. Also, you have a lot more missions in free play that weren't kind of explained or what kind of shown throughout the I honestly think they... By putting out this demo, they kind of shot themselves in the foot a little bit, people thinking there isn't as much content in it than there actually is.
I think that's been the reaction. Everyone I've heard talk about the demo that hasn't had the breadth of experience you have with the game has come back and said, I don't know, man, it feels thin. It feels very thin, and that's the main concern. I think you're right. They did not. It didn't represent the game in the best light, if there is so much more to it.
No, it really didn't. And I've actually felt the same thing. I played all weekend with my friends and we got to a point where we had kind of seen everything we wanted to see and done everything we wanted to do. So at that point, it was just grinding it out. But unfortunately, you can't even grind out in the VIP and in the public demos because you can't advance past level 15 and you can't get items over that certain level. So the draw for playing is not there. And I think that's the biggest downside. I would have preferred if they just said, here you go, play the game for 2 hours and that's all you get, because then there'd be that, you know, that lust for more. But look, in terms of content, I think it was only 2 or 3 days ago that Mike Gamble, one of the senior producers, said that they are currently working on post-game content. They have a week into working on post-game content. There might be more to the map that they're adding. There might be more items, even maybe a new javelin. So there's people there working to put out new content. And because it is that live service and it is going to be paid by the dreaded microtransactions within the vanity item section, there will be more content coming. If we can listen to that as a promise, that's all we got. We have promises.
Obviously, the game being a live service, I'm sure they're going to be releasing more content and more javelins for you to purchase and things like that, which is fine. I think that's what live service games are. Exactly. I should mention there's a difficulty system. It's really kind of, this game is the illegitimate child of the, you know, threesome of Diablo, Destiny, and Warframe, kind of. And there's a difficulty system.
Yeah, no, you're right.
There's a difficulty system that seems very inspired from Diablo. The loot system and the way the items affect your abilities also feel inspired from Diablo. There's a lot of all of this in there, but I worry that people, you know, that we have a Destiny 2 vanilla situation here where people play for 50 hours or more, which is already, you know, you get your money's worth if you've played 50 hours for a, you know, $60 game, But then you're kind of done and you don't feel like grinding anymore. And I don't know, maybe the difficulty system and the loot system will be that you were talking about, the lust for more items, will be that motivation for you to keep playing. And it works really well in Diablo. You do the same thing over and over again for a better chance of at getting certain items. So maybe that's going to work. I have to say, the combat system when I played felt a little bit tame, but when I listen to people like you describe the combo system and the need for that synergy, it feels very exciting. did you ever get bored of the, I guess you played for hundreds of hours, so you didn't, but of that system, does it feel different enough from everything else with the mobility and the abilities that are on such a short cooldown? Can you tell us what you think about the moment-to-moment gameplay rather than the incentive for replaying?
If you play in a bubble, it's going to get stale pretty fast. But if you play with a team, if you play with your friends, if you are constantly searching for, you know, the next item. And for those who don't know, the items in Anthem provide you with skills. So you might get a, for example, frag grenade item. You equip that to the specific javelin that's attached to, and that will give you that skill to use. So when you find a new gear piece that gives you an ability, it might have a modification to it based on its rarity. So you might find something really cool that changes up the skill. Same can be said about weapons as well. Weapons can have little modifiers that change up what they do. One such example is it will give an electric explosion when you land a critical hit. That is one example of a particular modifier on one of the weapons. So there is little things like that that can change the gameplay up. But like you mentioned before, Patrick, the combo system and coordinating with your friends or your teammates is really vital, especially for those later difficulties. I played Grandmaster 1 and it was extremely hard with the gear that we had. Mm. And I can only imagine what Grandmaster 3 would be like. The developers have said to actually get through that content, you're going to need to coordinate your team perfectly. You're going to need to call out when to cast skills, when to combine them for a combo and get that extra damage or that effect that, depending on what the javelin is, will benefit the team. You also need to coordinate what skills you actually have between your team, and you need to use the verticality. There was a few times where I would need to fly up very high, get onto like a surface where I did have the high ground, Anakin, and I wasn't getting fired at from everything below. And that really helped the team because I could continue to freeze all the targets around them. And then someone else would, you know, go in the ditch and make sure that they can continue to shoot the boss from below. So if you use, you know, the combo system, get good items and coordinate with your team and use, you know, the verticality of the map all together, it really changes up how the combat is, and it will help you get through those harder levels.
It's, you know, that's when the kind of thing that gives me hope for the game, because I'm a huge Destiny fan, as people on this show know, listening to this show know, and the lust for shooting things in the head in Destiny was what got me wanting to play more all the time, and I didn't feel anything like that in Anthem. But as you're talking about it, I'm like, yes, I want to do that. I want to go on that loot chase. And maybe I approached the gunplay a little bit too much like I do in Destiny. I was sitting somewhere or standing somewhere, shooting stuff in the face and not being that mobile, maybe a little bit. But I get a feeling that, first of all, because your abilities are on such a short cooldown, they are much more important than they are in Destiny. In Destiny, the gunplay is really the thing that takes precedence over everything. And the need for moving around, not just, I mean, vertically, of course, but also to flank enemies, go behind them, make sure that you're not all shooting from the same angle, etc., etc. It changes.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It changes it completely because, as you saw in the video that I posted, I flew over the enemies with the shields, the front-facing shields, and I started attacking from the back. And that created a situation where the enemy couldn't turn to face and just got nuked
both
down
of
by
you,
our abilities. Yeah, and as you said, you have noticed the difference between Destiny and Anthem. Now, if you are all about the guns, if you really want that, you know, the feedback you get from hitting someone in the head properly or really aiming correctly, then that Destiny 2 might be the game for you. Whereas Anthem is more about the abilities and being mobile, like you stated. When you can't just sit behind cover and shoot. It's definitely not a cover-based game. You got to fly around. You've got to move around. You got to dodge, and that's how it kind of differentiates from the two games.
Yeah, you have
Destiny
to,
actually.
There's a lot of going to the priority targets, for example. There are turrets and snipers that will shoot you from the other side of the map and have exactly, perfect accuracy. Yeah. So you have to go take them out and you have to dodge those shots. Otherwise, you're really just going to blow up in 30 seconds.
And you said at perfect accuracy, the enemies in Anthem do not miss often.
Right.
they will mess you up. You got to keep moving.
Yeah. So... yeah, I don't know. I mean, I could talk about the... I have a lot of concerns. Like the story felt... there was one interesting beat, but besides that, it felt like, you know, standard generic video game story, which is not very inventive. They're like, ah, you're the freelancer and we need you beyond the wall. Go be the cool person. And you have two choices to answer, which really don't change anything much beyond the tone of the conversation. The dialogue, I really didn't like it. I thought it felt contrived and weird. It felt like everyone was recording their lines in a separate, you know, room and time and direction. But I think I'm kind of alone in that. So other people have told me, no, what are you talking about? It's fine. So whatever. But so I don't know. There are structural issues with the game. Like, you are alone in your single player thing. You never feel like there's anyone around you. The dialogue and the conversations feel unnecessary. They just added it so that they could say it's a BioWare game. I don't know. And a lot of people compare it to Destiny and say, oh, but Destiny was like this in the beginning. Destiny wasn't. There was what Destiny did really well. It did super well. And again, I should refrain from this because I'm judging all of this on 2 hours of content, worth of content from the demo. So I want to wait and actually play the full game. But that's the feeling I still get.
Yeah, look, it's a legitimate concern. I mean, just because someone else doesn't agree with you doesn't make it any less of a concern, right? So to talk about your, firstly, the story aspect, I don't feel like we really got a good chunk of story to really judge how it's going to play out. I even haven't had a good chunk of story to judge how it's going to play out. When we were offered content, what I would do is I would always skip through all that because for me personally, I don't want to spoil any of that for me. And also, they didn't give us access to the whole thing. You know, we're not going to be able to play through the whole storyline because, of course, then there's spoilers and so forth. So yes, I do agree that having the two dialogue options doesn't really add much to it. And obviously, there isn't going to be big game-changing choices. Like, you're not going to be picking between going on one mission or another mission. It's not going to change in that regard because they need you to play with your four friends, and your four friends might have different choices. So realistically, they are arbitrary choices that don't really have real meaning. And yes, it does feel a little tacked on for me too, but in terms of the potential of the story, I do actually see it. I do feel like the main villain, from what I have seen and what I have played, is quite, I don't know, relatable is the right word. So I really want to see more of him. His voice actor is really good.
We didn't see any of that in the demo, so that's why it's interesting to me. It might be there's more to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm. As I said, I'm torn, and at the same time, I really want to go back and fly those suits. The feeling when you jump off a cliff and activate your thrusters, there's nothing quite like it. I don't think I've ever experienced something like that in gaming. So
you really feel the kick. The sound designers have done an amazing job with the soundtrack and all the sounds within the game. I think it really adds that kind of impact to everything. But like you said, I think the gunplay is probably the weakest aspect in terms of the sound design. So
right. Yeah, and to be honest, the guns, as I was saying, you have the abilities all the time and they're very different, and they're loot, essentially. You can loot more powerful, as you mentioned, abilities which motivate you. I mean, Diablo, for example, is 100% that. You loot stuff that is going to enable you to do different things, to try different builds. So I guess we'll see. It's coming out in a couple of weeks, so we'll talk about it again. I'm sure.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. The other thing I wanted to talk about is Apex Legends, which we started hearing rumblings about a couple of days ago, and it's out. It is a free-to-play battle royale, and before you roll your eyes and skip forward 5 minutes, it is an interesting one because it's Respawn Entertainment that developed it. It's in the Titanfall universe, and it is, honestly, it takes some interesting, it has interesting takes on a number of things. I had an excellent joke prepared that I forgot. I was going to go like, oh, we're going to talk about this multiplayer game published by EA that we've had a chance to try, and that, oh, and of course, it's Apex Legends, and that was going to be, no, everyone expected Shoot. Anthem. All right.
Should
well,
we start again? All right, take it from the top.
But I mean, there is a legitimate question there. Like, EA, aren't they, I guess it's a different audience. This is very PvP and free to play and battle royale, whereas Anthem is obviously going after the looter shooter crowd. So maybe they know, they have the data to know that those two don't intersect that much. But it is a little bit weird to have the beta for Anthem and then announce and release this game 3 days later, and then we have the game Anthem coming out a couple of weeks afterwards.
Yeah.
It's a bit weird, but
there's a lot smarter guys than me out there deciding these release dates. But for me personally, I think releasing November, you know, even October, December, January or February is just chaos. There's so many games right now that we can be playing, and releasing this 3 days after another one of their major titles does seem a little weird.
Definitely. And especially since Titanfall 2 went against Battlefield, which one was it? One? I can't remember. A couple of years ago, and that didn't play out so well for Titanfall 2. But anyway, regardless, first, it's very weird to announce and release a game at the very same time. I guess it creates buzz and people are excited and go play it. And certainly a lot of Twitch streamers started playing it the moment it was available. So there is some value there. But beyond that, the game is pretty interesting. It focuses on squads of three. You can only play it with squads of three. It's kind of the first real hero-based battle royale. So you currently have six different heroes that are available, two additional ones you can purchase, and more are going to be coming, of course. And they all have different abilities. And of course, you have the tropes of the battle royale genre. But one of the things that is really well done is the way you communicate with your squad mates. There's a button to ping stuff, and it works really well. And you can ping different types of messages targeting a place on the geometry of the world, and it worked super well. I've never had that kind of communication, right? It's very efficient.
This is what I took away from it. I absolutely love the ping system. This is a bit of a segue. It reminds me of Dota 2 for some reason, because in Dota 2 everything that you ping is contextual. If you ping a hero, it says go be careful of that hero. If you ping an ally, it says, go defend that ally. You know, it's contextual, and it's the same with Apex. Wherever you ping, it kind of contextually modifies the message. So if you click on an enemy, it marks them, and your team knows that's an enemy. You don't have to go to like a wheel and change what your message is going to be, though there is that as well. It is really cool.
Yeah, it's you know, it feels so natural and so fluid. That's where you see the value of the incredible game designers in Respawn, obviously formerly of Infinity Ward, Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, etc., etc. They are so great at extracting what's needed for a game, for a design, and putting it together in a package that feels natural, and it certainly shows in this one. And the different heroes feel pretty cool. The different legends, they're called in this game. The art style is relatively realistic, but not so much that it feels gritty like Call of Duty. I think it's a pretty good entry in the genre. I don't know that it's gonna it's gonna you know, revolutionize battle royale games or take anyone any other major game's place, but it's pretty cool. It feels pretty good, and the shooting is very efficient, very well done. Everything is fluid. I liked it, and I don't usually like battle royale games.
The art style actually reminded me a little bit of Borderlands for some reason, without the cell shading kind of strokes around everything. It's got this like timeless kind of cartoony feel to realism, which means that it won't age badly like some games like PUBG. If you look at that in 10 years, I'm sure that won't look anywhere remotely as good as something like this would in that 10-year period. And you mentioned the heroes, the legends. You don't actually level them up or change the skills. They start with everything that they need from the get-go, which I thought was pretty interesting. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I like that aspect of it, because I think, you know, I'm a big Overwatch fan, so I like that idea of the hero you're selecting is, you know what it is. If you see one on the other side, you know what they are, and you don't have to worry about you know, that super overpowered build. You know what to expect. And they also have a lot of personality, which I like. I don't know that it's going to make me into a fan of Battle Royale games, especially since I must have played, I don't know, 10 games and got zero kills. Like, I'm that bad. Zero kills.
Yeah, I don't have the Twitch reflexes as well.
Yeah.
I just can't do it.
Oh, really? That makes me feel a little bit better.
No, I'm a little too old for that. I just turned 31 3 days ago. So for me, I just can't keep up with these 17-year-olds. They're just way too fast for me.
Dude, I'm 45. So that legitimizes my not having any kills for 10 games.
Well, at least I can take you on. Let's do it.
We should have a 17-year-old in our squad, and then we would be good to go. I can heal people. That's what I do. I think, you know, it's going to be monetized with it essentially has an Overwatch type model, except they're probably going to be, they are selling heroes as well. So that's a little bit different, but you have loot boxes. But the interesting thing is that they went and displayed all of the percentages of everything, so you'd know exactly what chance you have of getting what. So I think that is a reaction certainly to the issues loot boxes have known for a while. They've chosen to still go the route of loot boxes, but a little bit more transparently. So it's going to be interesting to see how it works out.
Well, I guess it is a free-to-play game. You kind of have to expect them to make their money in some way, not justifying loot boxes here. I would have personally preferred just to be able to buy exactly what you want. If it's something particularly rare, they could just bump the price up. If it's, I'm not a huge fan of boxes, loot boxes, to be honest, but they have to make their money some way. So, I mean, it's just like, the characters were only like $7.50 or $12 or something to unlock as well.
I can't remember the exact price. You do earn currency in game that you can unlock the characters with as well. Obviously, you're going to need to play a little bit longer for that. You also earn loot boxes when you level up, so you get that. And obviously, the reason why they went the loot box route is that there's a lot of things that are not very that is essentially trash loot, like some crappy skins for your weapons that you're never going to see or stuff like that. I've said a few times, I think loot boxes are not there is a way of implementing them not too horribly. So I'm not going to get back into that conversation. But the fact is they do have loot boxes. We'll see how that works out for them. That's
we would be here all day.
Yeah, we would. And all night. I wanted to mention, I played Realm Royale as well. I played a few games of that. And honestly, I think it might be my favorite Battle Royale game. I was very surprised. This is the game from Hi-Rez Studios. It's kind of a derivative of Paladins, which is its own other thing. It reuses the assets and certain designs of Paladins. It's not bad at all. It's class-based. You have Ed is showing up. Hello, Ed.
Someone wakes up at 7:40, like way later than he's supposed to.
Well, it is incredibly early for you, so maybe we will forgive you. We already talked about Anthem, so sorry about that.
Oh, did you talk about how shitty it is?
Well, Dan likes it, and I'm on the fence.
Okay.
You didn't like it, clearly.
I brought in the negative opinion then.
you unfortunately didn't get a chance, and maybe that's the universe. Maybe that's EA getting your alarm clock.
Oh, they messed up my alarm. Yeah, you're right.
Exactly.
You
didn't like it at all?
I just thought it was a little clunky, which is what like BioWare games feel like, I think, anyway.
Mm.
And it doesn't work out that well for what should be a solid shooter. And Destiny always felt good.
Did you play with mouse and keyboard?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why. Do not play. Well, they said they would fix the flying, especially with the mouse and keyboard before launch.
It wasn't even the flying. It was more the shooting that was that was a problem. With me.
Well, go back to the beginning of the episode when it's released and listen to what we had to say. I think Dantix might convince you that there is more to it than that.
I don't know if I will in this case, just because I think he prefers the more shooter-focused kind of games, in which case I don't think Anthem is going to be for him.
I've played plenty of Mass Effect and Dragon Age, so BioWare games are my jam.
Did you like Mass Effect 3? Did you like...
Yeah, definitely.
Okay,
all right. I liked all of them. So I just think that the shooting, it didn't feel good on the PC at least. So I think that and they said the PC version was kind of like not that great. So
well, I
maybe
will,
that's my problem.
I will repeat what I said earlier. I think the shooting is not the best part of the game, and I played it like Destiny for a little bit, and I'm realizing now that you have to play it very differently. You have to be super mobile. You have to play with the abilities a lot more. And if you play it like Destiny, it's just a mediocre Destiny. So you have to kind of dive into the other aspects of the game to enjoy it if you want to try that. But anyway.
Right. I mean, yeah. I think it felt great to fly around. So
everyone agrees.
That part of the game I loved.
Well, that's the part you need to be focusing around, actually. You're meant to play really aggressively. You're meant to fly around, maneuver, combine with your team, work together kind of thing. If you just sit there and shoot behind cover, you're just not going to have a good time.
Yeah, I think a lot of people had Destiny-itis or something playing Anthem, and they played it like Destiny, and that's not the way to do it. So hopefully when the game comes out and people try it, it will be make a different impressions. But I'm excited to try the leveling part of it. Anyway, so we talked about that. We talked about Apex Legends a little bit. I was now saying that Realm Royale is surprisingly good. And I don't like Battle Royale games. I think the reason why I like Realm Royale is that the aiming is so soft that I could hit targets a lot more consistently than in other games. So that was good. But I would really recommend people give a Realm Royale a try. It's fun. It's got a lot of interesting concepts, and it really, between that and Apex Legends, it shows the breadth and depth of the Battle Royale genre. There are so many ways to iterate on that. I think Vince Zampella from Respawn was saying it's a genre, and I can't remember who said it, but someone was mentioning, you know, in shooters, you've had deathmatch that has been explored to to death. And there are millions of variations. Every game has its version of it. And Battle Royale is the same, or even more flexible. So it's not going away. Well, you know, Patrick stating the obvious, but Realm Royale, it's cool. You know what? We're not going to talk about Kingdom Hearts because none of us has played Kingdom Hearts 3, but I acknowledge it's a big thing. It is super exciting for people who are big fans of Kingdom Hearts. I so don't get it that I can't even bring myself to discuss it. I think both of you have enjoyed the previous games. I haven't.
Yeah, I think they're, I think most of the appeal, especially for the people that really, really like it, is they were all pretty young when it first came out. So, like, combining, like, all their favorite Disney characters with their favorite Final Fantasy characters was something that was really strange and appealing. And since then, it got kind of crazy as far as, like, the story is referred to. But I don't know. I still am interested and want to play it. It's just, you know, one of those things that I'd have to play Kingdom Hearts 2 first in order to play it.
You only played the first one. Yeah, well, you'd have to play Kingdom Hearts 1. You'd have, well, the second one, you'd have to play Birth by Sleep.
Birth by Sleep, yeah,
Code or Recode. Which one is the 3D one?
Dream Drop Distance.
There you go. A bunch of other ones as well.
In the 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I got it.
But yeah, so I've rarely seen so many people excited about something I know nothing about. And the thing about Kingdom Hearts is it feels so unwelcoming to new people that it doesn't feel like it wants you to try to give it a try. And at the same time, it's so faithful to the ones that have enjoyed it for so long that it feels like a very satisfying reward for those people, which is great. I'm very happy they like it. But and at some point, hopefully, you two will play it and you'll enjoy it too.
I played the first. I didn't play any of the others. I have to say that even playing the first was a bit of a begrudgingly difficult process for me, just because I like Disney and I like Final Fantasy, but I didn't like them together.
Oh, really?
I know that sounds odd, but there was something weird about, you know, seeing Mickey Mouse in this kind of setting. Like, I guess I was a little older than my cousin at the time who was forcing me to play. And I just, I don't know. And now, and these days, I actually don't have the time required to kind of really get into these big JRPG kind of experiences because they are long games. So for me, I understand why people can really enjoy it. There is that nostalgia kick there. Yeah. However, for me personally, I don't think I'll be giving it a try.
Ah, well, unfortunately. Again, this is sadly, there are a million podcasts and YouTubers who talk about Kingdom Hearts 3, and I'm sure people will get some joy out of it, but sadly, it's not our thing. And it's rare that you really can't talk about something even though you would want to, but I hesitated. I was like, should I buy it? Should I try it? I was like, no, there are other things. Other things like Nintendo. So a bunch of news on Nintendo's front, some more or less important. First of all, as we all know, Super Smash Brothers Ultimate sold gangbusters, but I was wondering a few months ago if they could manage to reach their 20 million Switch target for the fiscal year, which ends in March, and it seems they won't. They have revised their target to 17 million, which isn't bad, but it's not the 20 million they had promised. So that's one thing. There's Dr. Mario coming to mobile. Mario Kart has been delayed on mobile. Why not? Dr. Mario, I could play that a little bit. There's a bunch of things that... Oh, all right. Remember last episode we were talking with Emma, and I said there's this game on PC called CrossCode. It's really fun. Maybe you should give it a try. And I'm pretty sure I saw the developer say that they can't bring it on Switch because of some coding issue. So for once, you can feel free to buy a game on PC because you know it's not going to be coming on Switch. What happened during the Nintendo
Big
Direct?
Big fat liar.
It's coming on Switch in 2019. I'm so angry. There's rumors about a second version of the Switch that are now surfacing after the president, Kimishima, said he wasn't going to release a new version of the Switch. So I don't know what to believe anymore because clearly they're working on one. It's very obvious. They always do this. But I don't know. Maybe wait before. It's probably going to be a more portable version. There's also, I do want to talk about the Metroid Prime 4 delay, but before that, some of the games that were announced, there's SteamWorld Quest, a kind of RPG deck building game, and Wargroove, which... obviously in the SteamWorld universe. Wargroove, which Dan, you've been playing. It's essentially Advanced War. Oh, you've been playing it too, Ed. Okay, Dan, what do you think of it?
Oh, I think it's actually pretty... Look, from what I played so far, it's actually really fun. And it's fun for me because I'm used to games like Advanced Wars, which have you tactically deciding how to approach any given situation in a wartime kind of era. With Wargroove, it's instead of using tanks and planes and stuff, you use essentially people, and they have different classes that you can use, like a swordsman, spearman, war dogs even, and they cutely run off when they get attacked instead of being destroyed, which is just amazing.
Yeah, the developer said that, like, he got feedback during playtesting that, like, the dogs dying were sad, so they they changed it so the dogs just run away instead.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because it's so much easier now. I wouldn't have built them if they got killed. So.
Yeah.
But essentially, you it's a 2D kind of strategy game wherein you pick where your kind of units or what your units are and where they get built, and you try to eliminate the enemy, essentially. And it's a turn-based kind of strategy experience. Some of the later missions get quite intensive. I think I spent an hour on one mission.
Nice. Wow. So yeah, does it scratch your Advanced War itch satisfactorily?
It most certainly does. The only negative that I have right now for it is that you don't get to choose your commander in the storyline. You don't get to choose who you get to play as. That is my only gripe.
Ed, you seem to be liking it as well.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of Advance Wars kind of clones that have tried to, like, meet the metal of Advance Wars, but I think this one does it kind of better than all the rest. I think all the stuff that Advance Wars does right, like, compared to, like, a game like Fire Emblem. So Fire Emblem is very similar, grid-based strategy, but... In Advance Wars, I think the one thing that's kind of different is that as you get attacked by your enemies, or as you attack enemies, the unit itself gets weaker, because it's like it's supposed to be like a little mini army, right? So like when they get down to half their health, only half the guys are there now. So it kind of changes up your dynamic and when you're like trying to figure out what your next move is. So it's very cool. I've only played like a couple chapters of it, but I'm very excited to get to those harder chapters, like what Dan is talking about.
Yeah, and it's available on the Xbox One, the Switch, and the PC. And it was released when they announced it. Well, not when they announced it. It's been announced a while ago, but they said they didn't have a release date, and then they were like, February 1st, available. Go ahead, have fun.
And you have the Switch, get it on the Switch. That's all.
That's always the answer, which cursed me with CrossCode. Although it's available in 2019, but we don't know when, so maybe it's going to be a while. The other thing I wanted to talk about was this delay of Metroid Prime 4, which is, I think, obviously a good thing, because they weren't happy with the way Bandai Namco was handling it. It had already been moved from one team, I think, from Indonesia. I don't want to say something stupid, so maybe I shouldn't talk at all, ever. But yeah, it was moved back to Japan, and now Retro Studios, the original developers of the Metroid Prime series, pitched something to Nintendo that they liked. So Nintendo decided, you know what, we're just going to scrap everything, start back from scratch, and Metroid Prime 4 is not going to be available until forever. It's probably going to take, you know, 3-4 years, which is obviously the thing to do if you're not satisfied with the way the project is going. The reason I wanted to mention it, there isn't a lot to say beyond that. But for me personally, having the close connection that I do with Blizzard, it echoes very clearly the request that gamers made when Diablo Immortal was announced for at least an announcement of Diablo 4. Have, you know, a slide showing the logo and that's it. And we would have been happy. And I think they would have been. But I also have a big problem with that practice because there is something a little bit... maybe dishonest is a little bit of a strong word, but when Nintendo showed the Metroid Prime 4 slide, knowing that it was sorely in development and that these kinds of things happen, it is, you know, it tells gamers the game is coming in a reasonably timely fashion, and it does influence people thinking, you know what, I'm going to, maybe it's not going to convince someone to get a Switch from one day to the next, but it pushes it a little bit. And now the game is, it was announced in what, 2017, and it's not going to be out probably until 2021, 2022. It doesn't sit well with me, and it's the same with Elder Scrolls 6. You know, they showed something that has probably nothing to do with the actual game. Again, probably to make the pill of Elder Scrolls Blades, the mobile game, easier to swallow. And I understand the reasoning behind it, but I want to, you know, it feels, I don't know, does it? Do you guys feel the same way, or am I alone in this? That showing the game so early is... Go ahead.
Like you were saying, there is definite benefits for it. Like if they did show Diablo 4 being worked on, even just a little teaser, the pill would have been easier to swallow. But like you said, they should only do it if there is, you know, it's being worked on. If at least it's in development stage, or at least, you know, it's writing. You know, it's up on the whiteboard.
Well, we know it's being,
you
know, developed, just like Metroid Prime was being developed, but it was so far from release that this kind of thing can happen. And then you're like, I mean, they didn't say a release date, but sorry, I interrupted you. Keep going.
No, continue.
So, yeah, it just feels not icky. Again, icky is a strong word, but it feels like, yeah, well, this is what happens. You know, if you're not certain, you're closing in on you know, release maybe a year from now, which could be late, which means, you know, a year and a half or 2 years. You are not certain of this. And it's using this as marketing material in a way that doesn't sit well with me. Anyway, maybe that's just my hand.
I don't know. I'm okay with having an early announcement and then building hype for something. Like, and if the fact that Nintendo was willing to, like, kind of sit on their laurels, or whatever that phrase is, to, like...
I like sitting on their laurels. That works.
Yeah, sure. But like, they basically came out and was like, hey, I guess we messed up. Like, we're going to need some more time.
But they didn't mess up. They didn't... No, I'm sorry. They didn't mess up. They announced something that wasn't ready to be announced for hype purposes. And I understand this gets gamers hyped, but don't you think it's kind of deceptive if then the game doesn't come out for 5 or 6 years?
No. Okay. They never gave it a release date. All they gave, they didn't even give a trailer. All they gave was a little logo and said, like, hey, this thing is happening. Like, you've been asking us for the past 10 years. This thing is happening. Finally, this is the thing you want. Like, you might have to wait a little while to get it, but, like, this exists at least. That's exciting.
Do you remember Duke Nukem Forever?
Well, yeah, sure. Sure. I mean, no, just because it's coming out doesn't mean that it's going to be fantastic or anything like that. But Metroid Prime has never been something that, like, sells a bunch of consoles anyway. It's never been a really big seller. So the idea that they like announced it just to sell some Switches is, like, completely unfounded, in my opinion. They announced it because the fans were clamoring for it, and they want to, like, make their fans happy.
Yeah, but if it's not coming out for 5 or 6 years, I don't know. Well, okay, maybe I'm alone in this, but it feels weird.
Look, if they said, hey, we're actually going to rush through it, it's going to be ready in a year, would you be happy with that?
Of course not. I would rather they announce it when they're relatively confident that it's coming out within a couple of years. You know, I don't like the idea. It's not even that I don't like it. Maybe I'm, you know, maybe I've been sold to Blizzard because I worked there and all of this, and I'm trying to justify it with every mean I can. It's possible. But it's really the way I feel. I feel like announcing this, it's the same with Elder Scrolls 6. It's like, you don't have anything to show. You're kind of announcing that you're working on it. And you're hyping people with vaporware, kind of. Well, maybe not vaporware because they are working on it, but I don't know.
They didn't exactly intend for the game to take this long, you know? Like, maybe that's a little bit different of a marketing ploy than the Diablo thing. Like, Blizzard knew that it was going to take that long. It sounds like they were like maybe 50% done with development, and they were like, this isn't going to work, and then they canned it, you know? I think of like plenty of developers or publishers rather, they announce like games in at E3 like way, way, way in advance.
And then they don't come out. And
then they don't come out, or they do come out. Like I would say like Anthem would be an example of something that like, oh, it just had a little trailer at E3, but like no possible release date or anything like that. Mm. And the next year, EA showed more gameplay. Like,
yeah,
you know?
But the game, they had something to show, which is not the case with Metroid Prime 4. Clearly, Diablo 4.
I mean, all they had the first year was a cinematic trailer. They didn't show any gameplay.
They didn't?
The first year they announced it, no.
Are you sure?
No.
Are you talking about the 2017 trailer?
Yeah. Yeah,
I believe that did have gameplay.
Yeah, I thought
but
so.
Now okay. people are now comparing that.
Damn,
to
I picked the wrong example.
Yeah, I get your point. There's a few videos out there comparing the first initial 2017 trailer with the actual gameplay, and like many games, it doesn't look the same.
Yeah, that's normal though.
That is completely normal.
Yeah,
I guess I just picked the wrong example.
Yeah, I mean, no,
look, I'm between both of you here, completely. Because on one hand, it's like, yeah, look, they kind of do that, and you can't really control their schedules, and it's okay to be hyped a little bit. It's okay to know that the game's coming, but then in the same regard, it's like I don't really want to know until until it's like a year away or 2 years away, where it's not going to take me that long to get what I want, you know?
Yeah. There's something to see and something to be excited about without... It feels a little bit manipulative for me. But yeah, I might be painting a picture of that is not actually reflecting. Because, you know, it's fine that they announced Metroid Prime. It's just that it leaves a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth. It's not like I'm now hating Nintendo and Bethesda and don't want to see anything they ever do again. It's just like, yeah, I'd rather you didn't handle it like that. But okay, whatever. Anyway, so that was the thing I wanted to talk about with Nintendo's news. And now there's a bunch of smaller tidbits I want to go over. The first one is the Rage 2 gameplay that we've seen. I don't know if you guys have seen that gameplay sequence. It is crazy. It's like,
yeah,
I expected nothing from Rage, and now I am extremely hyped. Well, maybe extremely is exaggerating, but I'm quite excited to see it because it feels like, remember what Doom felt like, putting you in the middle of crazy action all the time? It feels like Doom squared, like Doom on Doom, like it's dooming what Doom did.
It feels like I'm going to need a break from the game after about an hour. It feels super intense, doesn't it?
Yeah, and maybe that's the editing of all of the powers put together, but it feels like some kind of superhero Quake or superhero like Mad Max, I don't know, but like you have all those crazy powers, you throw people in the air, make magic things explode everywhere. It's hard to describe, but I didn't expect
it to. It's unashamedly like bloodlust satisfying. That's where it is. It's just like if you have the need to just absolutely take out your rage on something, pun not intended, it seems to be that kind of game. And I'm kind of excited to play it, honestly.
Me too. And I didn't think I was going to be, but that 3 minutes of gameplay just kind of did it for me. Well, we have a few months until it comes out. It's May 14th. What else? Valve is, I might be showing my bias here, is crying tears of sadness over the fact that it is super unfair for Metro Exodus to be available on the Epic Game Store and not on the Steam Store. Now, okay, a little bit of context. It was available for pre-order. It would have, if Metro Exodus is a highly anticipated game, available for pre-order on Steam for a long while, and now it's been announced that it is not going to be released on Steam. It's only going to be released on the Epic Game Store, or at least for a period of about a year. That's what we expect. Of course, the people who pre-ordered it on Steam will be able to play it on Steam, including the additional content that is going to come after release. But a lot of gamers are unhappy about this, and they would like to be able to buy it on Steam. And the, you know, Valve is, it released a statement saying it was unfair to Steam customers, as I mentioned. And a big series of messy statements followed from the developer and the editor and the publisher, and some saying, oh, we didn't make that decision and we're not going to comment, but they did comment anyway, and et cetera, et cetera. Bottom line, the game is going to be releasing as a probably time exclusive on Epic after having had pre-order on Steam.
Yeah, they did say it was going to be for a year.
Right. Like, okay. So that's been confirmed.
So exactly 1 year. I have a problem with the way they kind of unveiled this news, I guess. Like the fact that they basically just very last minute, it seems like they knew it was going to be an unpopular decision. But at the very last minute, before like after this game has been on Steam, has been advertised on Steam for forever, they're like, oh, we're not doing it. We're not doing it. And I'm going to kind of change my tune that I had, I think, the last time I was on this podcast about the benefits of the Epic Game Store as far as like competition and all that stuff. This isn't competition. This is very anti-competitive, actually, to basically buy developers into publishing exclusively on your store. That does nothing good for competition, because it just means that Epic, who's willing to spend all that extra money to get exclusives on their store, is going to win out, and it doesn't matter what the rest of the store does, because the only way to get that game.
This is a publisher's version of pay to win, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I will commend. I think it's Deep Silver, right? Is the publisher. Yeah, I will commend Deep Silver. They gave the $10 discount on the Epic Game Store because they get the bigger cut on there. So I will commend them for doing that at least. But that is going to be a rarity in a capitalist system. They're always going to just go for the $60 price mark because that's what people are willing to pay for games.
Okay, Dan, you seem to agree.
Yeah, look, I agree. I don't like the way that they handled this whole situation. I think it would have been better just to concede and just put them on both stores, honestly. But the way that the public reacted, I will completely condemn. I don't think it's right to go to a previous game on Steam and just, you know, bomb it, downvote it. It's just so immature. It's like, yes, you're unhappy and you've got every right to be unhappy, but don't do that. Like, there's developers that were involved in that game that had nothing to do with the business decisions.
Yeah, I have to say, the competitive nature of it, like, I agree that, okay, it feels like, again, a gamer, somewhat childish gamer reaction. I understand it's inconvenient to go to the Epic Store and to download it. I understand there are less features on the Epic Store. And yes, in this case, it was available on the Steam Store first, and then it was pulled. But everyone who bought it on the Steam Store can get it. The thing is, from the competitive nature of it, Steam has a monopoly, a de facto monopoly, on the attention of gamers, and that's why they are unhappy, because they want to get the thing from the place they always get it. So without the possibility for Epic to indeed pay for an exclusive, it probably would be a lot more difficult to attract gamers away from Steam. I mean, the price, I guess, obviously, man, would be something.
Let's say.
Just a second, Ed. Let me finish. people don't realize the fact, and I love Valve. I love Steam. I use it all the time. But it is also true that they have benefited from this standard 30% cut from across the industry and have made a lot of money off of it for what I think is not... I might be speaking out of turn, but it doesn't seem like they have been improving the platform to the extent that it requires 30% of the giant revenue that they're making. And they've been benefiting from that de facto, monopoly in a way that is super anti-competitive. So the fact that they then come and cry crocodile tears of, oh, it's unfair to Steam customers. You've been unfair to the entire industry for, you know, a decade. And yes, the way the market works is that a competitor should arrive and shake things up, and a competitor hasn't arrived until now. So, you know, it's not Valve's fault that that hasn't happened. But now that one has come, and the only way to get people away from Steam is by, yes, buying timed exclusives, it's not unfair. It's exactly the way the market should work. And I don't think it's anti-consumer. It's very much pro-consumer, because if the consumers of those stores are the developers, they are getting more money out of this. And obviously, the big AAA games are not going to give the money back to the gamers, but some people will, like they did in the US in the case of Metro Exodus, and some of the smaller developers might as well. I mean, this is the market working as it should. Staying forever with Steam is not healthy. So, yes, it's not the ideal situation for this specific case, but, and it wasn't super well handled, maybe, but I can't bring myself to side with either Valve or the gamers that are condemning the move in this case.
Yeah, I mean, like, but the fact that they were willing to do the $10 price cut in the U.S., as we've said, like, that should be, like, enough for gamers to feel like it's good enough. It's more right, about it? The handling. Yeah. It is, but it's more about the handling of how it kind of went down.
I guess the thing is,
like, if it was on the Epic Games Store for this whole time, it, like ever since the like Epic Games Store like, started to get super popular, and it was always $50, like that is a competitive practice. That is saying like, hey, we get more money out of the Epic Games Store, so we're willing to pass that along. Let the market decide. Hey, the market, I'm going to spend $50 on here. No. This isn't the market deciding. Like the market being the consumer market, not the seller market.
Yes, the stores are
look
catering...
at this and go, it's cheaper here.
But the stores have two here, masters so or two customers. They have the developers and the final customers. The developers are customers as well, and this is a market. An element of the market too. Anyway, Dan, anything to add before we move on?
Once again, I am between both of you here. I was just sitting back because one of you was saying my opinion, and the other one was saying my opinion. So look, for me, Ed makes a lot of sense when he says let the market work itself out. Because to me, it's if it is $10 cheaper, then yeah, I might consider getting it on the Epic Store. Whereas a lot of people who prefer just to have all their games on one platform like Steam would gladly pay that extra $10. And I think that's a good practice because frankly, I don't like having like a billion platforms. Right now, I just forget I have certain games and I forget to play them because I just can't juggle the amount of platforms.
I think we'll be talking a different story.
No, but the competition, if you want to have competition on the PC, you are going to have different sellers. It's impossible not to have competition without different sellers, right? It is going to happen if you want competition. Otherwise, Valve is going to reign supreme forever.
Yeah, I just think there would be a different story if like Epic came in and was like, hey, games that are normally $60, we're going to set the price point to, let's say, $50 or $55. Like, that's going to be the standard on our platform.
No, but they don't. That is also not the way things work. They, if you want to let the market decide, you let developers. You're forgetting that developers are customers of those stores as well. And they didn't have an option until now. And it should be for them to decide how they're going to price the games. If they want to price it $60 and keep, you know, the extra revenue that they can make on the Epic Store, they should have that choice as well. Anyway. Okay, I'll shut up and let you say the last words, and then I'll move on.
I mean, I've already kind of said okay. my piece.
Go ahead, Ben.
I don't want to say that. It's not terrible. It's definitely not terrible that we have like multiple things. I'm worried about fracturing in particular, but it's not terrible that we have all these multiple clients that are and they're competing for our dollars. That obviously makes sense. It just seems like when Epic goes through all these extra steps of like paying for exclusivity on their store, then it just comes off as a little anti-competitive. So that's my take.
Okay. I think you're wrong, but that's okay.
I'm feeling testy today. I feel like I need to prove myself. I slept in for 40 minutes. Now I need to throw some punches.
That's a good way to approach the show. As long as they're kind punches, like you don't go too hard on me.
They're friendly jabs.
Excellent.
So what would be the middle ground between you two here? Just out of curiosity, so what would be the middle ground?
I think we're going to get to the middle ground because developers are soon not going to be in that situation anymore where they had a pre-order on the Steam store, and just when they decide where to get the pre-orders up, they will decide where to do it from the get-go. And I think that's that Metro Exodus issue is an outlier. We're going to have issues where maybe the game is going to be available on both platforms, and maybe the game is only going to be available on the Epic Store. I don't think it's often going to be available on the Steam Store only, unless you're a smaller developer. But yeah, the middle ground, we're going to get to it, and it's going to the thing that stings is probably the fact that it was available and then it wasn't. The thing that stings the most.
Yeah. Yeah, and if they continue the trend, trend is an overstatement, but the $10 thing, if that continues like that, that could be a game changer in the market.
Yeah, I wouldn't get my hopes up.
Yeah, sure. I mean, sure. But like, if that happens with more developers, that puts actual pressure on Valve drop their...
It doesn't just need to be a $10 cheaper benefit. It could be, hey, if you purchase on the Epic Store, we'll give you an in-game cosmetic, for example, and that might encourage people.
I mean, like, I've said my piece, but like, the fact that
but you slept Epic for 40 extra minutes, so you have to add to it.
Yeah. So the fact that Epic is willing to give like an extra cut to developers should be enough. They shouldn't also have to like just throw money at these developers.
Well, that's that shows you the power of Steam's monopoly. That is exactly the reason. Yeah. Okay. All right. You know what is another monopoly? Apple. And they are apparently thinking about, first of all, there might be an iPod Touch with a strong gaming aspect marketing that is going to be released, which is, I think, pretty clever. And I'm not a mobile gamer, but, you know, they exist in our universe. And they're also thinking about, apparently, a subscription service, which might be with games downloads or even game streaming. The discussions might still be in early stages. It began in the second half of last year. But gaming subscription service on mobile. I don't think I'm wrong in saying that we might not be the primary target. But it's an interesting idea, I think.
This is one of those things that I want to touch with like a 10-foot pole, because I feel like I'm just going to be super negative, which is normally not my thing. I just don't like mobile gaming. I just don't think I ever will, and I don't understand it, and I'm not the demographic.
So yeah. It depends on the monetization of it. Like if we're talking about like these games that always try to nickel and dime you, like if you pay for a subscription service, then like maybe you don't have to go through all that microtransaction stuff. Like that stuff, I mean, if that would be cool if that's the thing, but we just don't know enough about it to make a real judgment, I think.
Go ahead, Dan.
It feels like at this point mobile gaming hasn't reached the stage that the other platforms are at, where it doesn't some games on other platforms feel like they aren't just taking you for a ride, whereas all the popular mobile games that I've tried and I've played feel like they're designed to give you quick gratification in order to get a quick purchase. And I just don't like
that. Yeah, I mean, the mindset of the two different game types is like completely different.
That's certainly
like, from the developer point of view.
Yeah, that's certainly the majority of the popular mobile games. I think the one thing that was interesting to me is that if there is a subscription, I'm sure it would be, you know, cheaper than a Netflix subscription or something like that. Maybe it would be a PlayStation Plus type deal where you pay $5 a month or something like that. But regardless, I wonder if it could help for the monetization, because maybe it would get people, some developers, to get some money out of it from the get-go. I don't know exactly how those deals work, but I don't think they could get away with offering a subscription to games that are free to play otherwise and just give you, you know, a bunch of gems or whatever for your subscription. It would seem like they would need to include games that you would have had to pay for otherwise. And maybe that could lead to something a little bit more healthy on that store. I don't know what else they could do, but it feels like that wouldn't work if they only gave you access to, you know, packs in free-to-play games.
It would have to be something pretty substantial, because right now the big draw of mobile games is a lot of them are free. You can just jump in, download games, and play for free. To actually take money for subscription, it has to be substantial. And I have a feeling it's just going to be stuff like achievements.
Yeah.
I don't really care too much for that.
Yeah, well, we'll have to wait and see, but that would be the positive development there, but it's, I don't know. Talking about achievements, Microsoft has essentially announced through a program for GDC, which is happening in March, the Game Developers Conference, they are going to be giving a talk about the expansion of the Xbox Live SDK, which provides your friends list, your achievement list, and there will also be some elements of crossplay between, of course, the Xbox and the Windows PC, and the Switch and the mobile platforms of iOS and Android, which is weird. It means that we're going to be able to log into Xbox Live in games on those platforms and get, as I mentioned, our friend list, some achievements. We've seen a little bit of this with the different versions of Minecraft that all use, including on Switch, all use the Xbox Live network. But it follows the policy of Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft for the last 5 years, who wants to have Microsoft be the infrastructure of everything and be present everywhere. But for games, it's certainly novel and different. I don't even know if I care all that much. I'm not a big Xbox person, but I guess having the Xbox Live, if you're into that ecosystem, everywhere is kind of cool.
Does it mean games though? Does it mean you can play certain Xbox games on your Switch? Will that be a thing, or will it just be?
Well, I mean, no, obviously the first step, and on the Switch, I don't think it will happen, but if you take into account the cloud streaming services that everyone is working on, including Microsoft.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not on the Switch, but on your iOS device or Android, or I don't know. Yeah. It's
I mean, just the possibilities of getting more games onto like just the PC that were Xbox exclusives before is kind of neat.
It seems like they're expanding.
What if they put backwards compatibility, like that kind of thing?
But this
on
is
the
so
Windows.
That SDK is just for the Xbox Live, you know, communications, like social network kind of, you know?
Okay.
Not like you're gonna have the Xbox Live Arcade games that are gonna be included in all of this. It's just that's why it's so weird. It's not the games, it's just the wrapper around their communications layer. So I don't know. Hey, have you heard about Auto Chess?
Yes, I have played it.
Okay. What the hell is that game everyone is talking about? I have no idea.
Okay, well, look, it seems like it just exploded overnight, doesn't it?
It's a mod for Dota, or what?
Yeah, so in Dota 2, you can jump into it and make some custom maps. And this is essentially a custom map. programmed by some pretty clever people. Essentially, what you do is you get offered certain heroes at the start of the game. You pick your hero and you place it on a board. Then enemies will spawn and your hero will proceed to kill them or die. And it's like a tower defense. Once you let enough creatures hit your dude, you're dead. But the twist is you're against, I think it's 6, 7, 8 other people. And every now and then you fight the heroes that they've put out on the field. And there's little mechanics like certain heroes will give benefits to other heroes if there's a certain amount of them, or the positioning will matter based on which is ranged and which is melee. And there's just kind of this strategy behind it. Banking gold for a certain amount of time will increase the amount of gold you get overall. And it's kind of like this, when they say auto chess, they mean the combat auto resolves and you're making the strategic decisions. That's essentially what it is.
Right. So it's kind of a mix between a tower defense card game and Dota.
Yes, exactly. It takes the Dota lore. It has like a card game feel about you picking heroes, like playing cards. And yeah, it does have that tower defense aspect for the auto resolve.
Well, I wanted to mention it because it is getting incredibly popular, and I think it might be spun out into its own game fairly soon because everyone's talking about it. So,
All the top streamers are all on Twitch right now playing it. So, I mean, something's happening there.
Definitely. Quantic Dream has, remember a couple of episodes ago, and basically every episode we talk about NetEase or Tencent investing in a Western company. Well, Quantic Dream has received a pretty big investment from NetEase, which means the Quantic Dream games won't be exclusive to Sony anymore, because obviously NetEase wants games on as many platforms as possible. So, I mean, not a lot more to say beyond the fact that the two Chinese companies are continuing to own everything in the world, I guess. hey, we were talking
That's
about
sad.
It's. I don't know if it's sad. I hope it won't be. I guess. I hope they won't demand. They already have the market that they come from. So I hope they want to get into our market and they won't transform our games into their games. Right? Does that make sense? Maybe. We were talking about loot boxes, which Apex Legends is going to have. Well, Fortnite, not Fortnite Battle Royale, but Fortnite Save the World, is removing blind loot boxes. So what's going to be happening is that they are going to show you what items are coming in the next loot box you open. And you can choose to buy it, of course, or not buy it. And it refreshes every so often, maybe every day or so. Of course, you might want to buy it to get the things that are in the next loot box. But it's a little bit better, I suppose. It's not a blind loot box, the first one you're buying anymore. And actually, you can buy one and you're going to see what's going to be happening in the other one and decide if you buy that one as well. It's a little
bit
better.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I like it. I think that's better than it actually being invisible, in which case you'd be like, oh, yeah, look, I'm really looking for this particular thing. I see it there, then I'm going to drop a bit of money. I think it might even incentivize more sales. People that wouldn't typically buy a loot box might be incentivized to do so because they know they're going to get what they want.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think of it like that, but you're right. It becomes like a pack that you can buy or not. Obviously, the people who want an item might still want to buy a lot of loot boxes because you don't know what's going to be coming in the one after, so it kind of removes it from one, but it gives the possibility for people who want to know so. And talking about Fortnite, again, every episode I have to talk about something incredible that Fortnite does to sustain its success. The Marshmello concert. Marshmello is he's a DJ. He does electronic music. He partnered with Epic to do a concert in Fortnite. It lasted for about 10 minutes. While it lasted, everyone playing Fortnite could go to that giant stage and see Marshmello, the DJ, modeled like his movements were being transcribed in the game in real time. And they were hearing the music live. Like, It's, first of all, it's crazy that this happened because it's kind of fun and silly, and it never happened in that way before. And second of all, again, Epic and Fortnite being so inventive and creative in the way they get people to enjoy and talk about the game. They continue to, when I think, oh, all right, you know, they've amazed me with what they're doing, even though I don't play Fortnite Battle Royale, I really don't like it. But when I think they've amazed me enough for this year or last year or whatever, they keep amazing me more. This was a really clever way of doing it.
Oh, yeah. This kind of behavior needs to be encouraged. I personally don't play Fortnite. I personally don't enjoy it. But when they do things like this, that's just, it's clever. It's inventive. It draws the community together. If other developers see that they can do events like this, live events like this, then it might encourage them in other games. And I'm completely for that.
Yeah. It was really fun. If you have an opportunity, go watch the video. Everyone's dancing and doing emotes and stuff by the stage. And then when the concert ends, it's only 10 minutes. Everyone's dropped from the sky again, and they proceed to obviously shoot each other. But that was fun. There's a new Dragon Ball, as you do, obviously. There's a new Dragon Ball game in the works. It's an RPG this time. We don't know much, but I know there are Dragon Ball fans in the audience, so I wanted to mention it. Dragon Ball Project Z, enigmatic. But it's an RPG. The graphics look interesting. We'll see what happens. PlayStation Plus is pretty cool for this month. It has Hitman, highly acclaimed game. It's from a few years ago, but it's still very relevant. For Honor is also available. I don't know which version it is. It might be the starter version. But For Honor, which is also one of those games that has a super active community, that the game wasn't incredible when it launched, but Ubisoft kept working on it, and there are a lot of people who really like it. And the cloud storage you get from your PlayStation Plus has been upped to 10 gigabytes. So if you do, sorry, to 100 gigabytes. So if you had more than 10 gigabytes of game saves that you needed to save, then now you should be okay. I don't know who
and
does.
And all the rest of that will be taken up by Red Dead Redemption 2.
Clearly. yeah, so those are pretty cool. Two final things. Resident Evil TV series, we're going to get that at Netflix. I don't know what to think about this. I'm both excited and scared, but why not? Netflix has shown that they can make good things. But
I think you'll be excited and scared while you're watching it as well.
That's, probably.
That's the intention.
You know,
if you played the Resident Evil 2, that, if they actually make it true to the actual source material, I'd be happy to watch it. But if they do like a Titans thing, I'm not into that.
I might be excited even more if they do it like the original Resident Evil and make it super campy and, you know, like super badly acted on purpose. No, that would be terrible. But yeah, no, Resident Evil 2, I mean, we mentioned it, I think, last episode, but what a way to show the world how to do a remake. It is incredible in the way it is faithful to the original one and changes just enough to bring it into the modern age while not changing the nature of it. It's amazing. Maybe they can.
They did a fantastic job with it. Yeah, I love. Look, usually I wouldn't like a remake to that kind of game, but they made me a believer with that, and that's saying a lot. So,
okay, last bit of news. We all know you love esports. Everyone loves esports, and the one thing that everyone loves as well is Farming Simulator, obviously. So. What was missing from our gamer lives was the Farming Simulator Esports League, which is now a reality, so we're all super happy. All right. I laugh and I joke, but Farming Simulator is incredibly popular, admittedly mostly in Germany, and they're weird. But I love my German friends. But like, they sold 1 million copies in a month of Farming Simulator 2019. And this is really clever. Like, they're putting up a little bit of money. It's like 250,000 euros as a prize pool for Farming Simulator.
Just a little bit. 250,000. That's nothing.
Well, when you compare it to other esports, I guess, is what I should
like
have said.
Dota 2, where it's exactly that's like the third place prize.
Yeah, exactly. When you count it,
it's 10 million.
Yeah,
it was 10 million last year for first place.
Yeah, it's like the total prize pool is something like 15 million. It goes up every year with the Invitational, but the International Invitational, I can never remember that name. But yeah, so I really like it because why not? You know, like building your farm faster than the person before and like reaching the pig headcount that is your goal faster than the person before you're playing against. It's not more dumb than capturing the point in Overwatch or killing the enemy team in Dota or League of Legends. I mean, yes, it may be a little bit more funny, but why not? There are tons of people playing this game, and it's it's getting a easy press and media for a farming simulator. I think it's pretty clever and it's pretty funny.
I think it's brilliant. Have you seen Games Done Quick?
Yes. Yes.
They raise millions for Doctors Without Borders and other charities. Essentially, they can in a few different streams, they'll have two, three, four people going against each other to race through a game. And it might be Mario, for example, and everyone's playing Mario together and trying to get to the end as fast as they can. And obviously these are speedrunners, so they essentially break the game to get through it very quickly.
Right.
But with something like Farming Simulator, I think competitively speedrunning through it would be quite interesting to watch. I would watch it.
Yeah. I would probably not have thought about watching Farming Simulator if I'm not saying I will now, but I might. And that is more than I would have said a week ago. So there you go. We are all super excited for Farming Simulator competitions. Who would have thought? And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Before we leave, I want to thank very warmly Dan for being on the show, and somewhat warmly Ed as well, because he was late, so you get a little bit less of a
Dan thanks for being on time, Ed not so much.
and give you a chance to tell us where we can find more of you. Dan, I mentioned your channel is called Dentix, very cleverly. Anything else? Or what can people find on the channel?
So on / Dantix right now, I'm doing a bit of Anthem content, but you can expect stuff like Rage and Cyberpunk and content coming up very soon. You could also find me on Twitter, which is / Dantix official. You can also find me on Twitch, which is / Dantix streams. So it's a lot of gaming content. And basically stuff like this. So
I'd recommend, if you're interested in Anthem, the video titled Loyalty, the new footage breakdown, Loyalty, Team Widgets and Combo Effects and More, is the one that really got me hyped for the moment-to-moment gameplay. So go check that one out. It's one of the latest ones on the channel, on YouTube. Ed, what about you?
Yeah, you can watch me stream live tonight, actually. I'll be playing the final couple chapters of Metro 2033 and kind of trying to get through those games before Metro Exodus comes out, even though I'm sad about it. So you can catch that at 4pp.tv, and you can follow me on Twitter at @Adesis, and as usual, that will be in the show notes.
Exactly. Both Twitter accounts will be in the show notes, so you can get them from there. For me, it's NotPatrick on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. If you want to see pictures of my incredibly cute kid playing with his first PlayStation 4 controller, he's 1 year old. He didn't watch the screen too long. Don't freak out.
He ate the controller.
Yes, he played a little bit, or I should say like moved the controller a bit, and then proceeded to slobbering all over it, which was maybe not the best. You know, he's young. He's learning. So you can find pictures of that and other things there. And of course, the show is at frenchspin.com, along with other things you might enjoy. And that's going to be it. We will be back in a couple of weeks, probably with a little bit more, maybe not, I don't know, Anthem talk. Maybe we'll wait for it to be, for me to have progressed a little bit more in the game. Maybe we'll give early impressions and all of the game news you need that will be in the next episode. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.